Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we got a special program today. I have a private conversation with Eric Van Denken, the father of Ancient Aliens. After 50 years of discussing the question of ETs, he has come up with a book following Chariots of the Gods, which he published over 50 years ago. And is there actual evidence of ET contact? And it looks like, and I have to admit it, that there is new evidence. There are a number of scientists that Eric brings up in his book. Among them is Chandra Wickramsey's and also a person who we know, Robert Bavall. They have a new book coming up called Cosmic Womb, The Seeding of Planet Earth, this winter. So this interview is important for a number of reasons, and some of the things that Eric admits will be a little bit interesting, but it was good to get in touch with him. It's hard to get Eric on a one-on-one conversation, and we did it. So this is going to be fun. We go to South America, check in with Ashley Cowie today. He is going to be talking about a discovery at Lake Humboldt and some of the ancient people who lived there and who also followed the cosmos with special alignments in their ancient structures. We also will hear from Melissa Tittle from Gaia on what's coming up this week and into the future. And all this and the news today on Earth Ancients. For December 9th, 2017, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Blitzing and blitzing and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Got a bag that's filled with toys for boys.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I hope that gets you into the Christmas state of mind. You know, it's always a challenge for me. You start seeing Christmas decorations in October, and it's like, hey, it's not Christmas yet. Don't put those up. It's not. I don't want to celebrate Christmas in October. Anyhow, that was Gene Autry. He was one of these singing cowboys. That was recorded in 1947. You know, and the singing cowboys were a big deal for years. I remember Roy Rogers and his wife, Dale Evans, who was another singing cowboy. You got to remember his horse, Triggers. He had this beautiful horse, Palomino, I think. And anyhow, the singing cowboys were huge in the late 50s and 60s. And when I was growing up in the 60s, singing cowboys was a big deal. You go to see the cowboys in the theater, and they're shooting their guns, and then at some point they start singing, which is kind of interesting. Hey, well, hey, I hope this is getting you in the spirit of Christmas. I hope you're well. You know, Christmas time is one of these times where you're eating and you're boozing, and it's, oh my God, eggnog. You know, eggnog with a little brandy. Some people eat, drink eggnog with rum, or just straight eggnog. I love eggnog, but that stuff is just caloric insanity. And you add the baked goods. You got your cookies. You got your cakes. You got your candies. You know, screw the tree. I want to eat. That's making me hungry right now. Anyhow, I hope you have plans. I hope you have a good time coming up for Christmas, because it is the Christmas season. So happy holidays. All right. So I'm going to get a little selfish here, and I'm going to promote an upcoming trip we're doing to Guatemala next June. It's the June 15th through the 24th. You know, and one of the places we're going, and we're going to talk with Michael Lundquist, the president and owner of Vital Travel, a number of times before we go. But one of the places we're going to is Quirigua, Quirigua, Quirigua. And this is it's an ancient Mayan city in Guatemala that's noted for their massive standing stones, or otherwise known as stela. A number of them are anthropomorphic. They're figures that are half animal, half human. But what's really unique about this place is the brilliant design and artwork. This is Maya art at its high point in their civilization. I mean, amazing carvings, writings, their stele have their hieroglyphics on them, beautifully cut, people cut into these as well. And when you join us, this was a place that I really wanted to put on the map, and it's close to Copan, and Copan is noted, has been noted for a couple of hundred years for its exquisite carvings, its hieroglyphic stairs, its amazing pyramids and structures, and it's we'll be there for a full day. But Quirigua has always been a fascination of mine. And I'm going to be, I posted a small gallery on the Facebook page that you can check out, but you got to see this place. And I've had it on my bucket list for probably a good 5 to 7 years since I really discovered how amazingly designed and how it's composed, how beautifully the place is composed. And these anthropomorphic sculptures, morphing sculptures, changing. So come along with us. You can get all the details of this tour by going to the website. Go to earthancients.com/tours. Look at the itinerary. This is a really special itinerary. And also, again, we've made it so inexpensive. It's a couple of $1,000 for the entire tour, and all your food's covered, your travel's covered, your permits are covered, and we're going to have a blast. So Quirigua, amazing Maya history. I hope you can join us. Earth Ancients is sponsored by Gaia, and Gaia is presenting Cosmic Disclosure this week with Dave Wilcox. There's some other programs, Deep Space Season 2, Planet Mars. And there's Dave Wilcox talking about a guide to non-terrestrial beings, so aliens on Earth. There's over 7,000 titles, and it's growing. Each week, they release new titles that are, they focus on topics we cover here on Earth Ancients. But and one of their series is Ancient Civilizations, which is hosted by Graham Hancock, and it is just mind-blowing, fantastic. They just concluded the season. You can see all the series by going to Gaia, GAIA.com/Earth Ancients. Now, typically you'd be going, hey, why bother? Well, they have a starter program for 99 cents. Yes, 99 centavos. It's not centavos, 99 cents. And after that, it's $9.95. But there's no way you can see 7,000 titles in a month. It'll take a long time. It really would take a long time. Check it out, Gaia.com/Earth Ancients, and really see what is happening with Gaia. We'll learn more about what they're doing with programming later today as we check in with Melissa Tittle. Gaia, check it out. I think you're really going to like it.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Coming to you live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
And the news is sponsored by Harry's. Now, did you get your free shaver? If you're listening and you didn't get your free shaving kit, you got to go to harrys.com/Earth Ancients. This is a really cool kit. It's got your shaving gel. It's got your razor. It's got your really cool grip handle. It's even got a cover for the blade after you use it. And this is a free offer. I think they want just the postage, which is $3, but it's about a $13 to $18 value depending on where you're located. But also this month and throughout the holidays, Harry is offering a discount for any orders on their holiday gifts. And their gift set started about $10. You'll get $5 off. You can see it at harrys.com/Earth Ancients under holiday gifts. This is a chance to give really cool and really quality shaving gear to that special person in your life. And I've been using Harry's for 8 months, and it is the closest shave I've ever had. And, you know, the other thing that's really cool is, you know, with the commercial blades, they tend to go out pretty quick. But Harry's, they actually bought their own razor shop in Germany, and they make these precision blades. There's actually 5 blades on the head of the shaver. And I mean, every time I shave, it's like one of the cleanest shaves I've ever had. So check it out for the holidays. Get that $5 off and get your free shaver. It's a kit. It's a really cool kit. Harry's. Harry's.com/Earth Ancients. Scientific news, Nature magazine, nature.com, put out a program on a new discovery found in the Alaskan region, Yukon and Alaska region, of muck deposits. And these muck deposits were first discussed in 1955 by Emanuel Velikovsky in his book, World in Collision. Basically, what we have here is a massive pile of bones and tree bark, splintered trees, and wildlife that was damaged and ripped up and made in and converted into this muck, this muck from an asteroid hit around 12,000 years ago. Now, Velikovsky talks quite a bit about it. The reason for these massive piles that nature is reporting on is that this asteroid hit created massive tsunamis and mega floods, killing millions of animals and whatever human life was there. I talk a little bit about it in my upcoming book, The Maya Controversy, but this is more evidence of this station that befell the planet over 12,000 years ago. So the entire article is on the Facebook page. Go to Facebook, go to Earth Ancients, go to the group page, or check it out. It's on the earthancients.com page, the full article, and the muck and the analysis and the carbon dating. It's a pretty eye-opening description of what happened during this asteroid hit. The first 3D model of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey has been created. An archaeologist has created what this site might have looked like over 12,000 years ago when it was used as a observatory and teaching university. You can actually see all the columns. You can see the floor, what is was composed on the floor. And you can actually see how they used these megaliths to chart the heavens, to perhaps study the constellations. And the entire 3D reproduction is on this article, so check that out. In Venezuela, they've discovered a new series of petroglyphs. In this case, these petroglyphs appear to be mythological beasts, some form of animal, and the site that they found it at is dated to over 2,000 years old. A number of animals, not really identifiable by today's standards, are in these petroglyphs, and it was discovered just on the border of the Amazonian River in Venezuela. You can see the whole article and a number of pages of these different petroglyphs on the Facebook page. Here's a good one for you. The oldest humanoid bones have been found of a very small human, very small person. Perhaps these are an early type of little people that we've talked about. But these are found in South America in a cave and date to over 3.7 million years ago. It's a complete skeleton, and it's very, very well composed. It's very close to Homo sapiens sapiens. So that now is the oldest humanoids in the world. We also have a new gallery from Hugh Newman, who has just finished a tour in Peru of a number of these megalithic buildings that he has toured. And I want to thank Hugh for sending this gallery. And we have a complete video of Graham Hancock discussing his book, Magicians of the Gods. It's a lecture he gave earlier in the year. And I know you're going to enjoy it. So if you get a chance, have a listen. So we're heading to Colombia, South America to check in with Ashley Cowie. This week, Ashley is in Lake Humboldt, South America, to tell us about some interesting new discoveries he's made. Here's Ash. So we're checking in with Ashley Cowie, located down in Colombia, South America. Ashley's been traveling recently and posted a fascinating video on an area called Facatativa. It's located in Lake Humboldt, a region that is noted not only for its strange petroglyphs, but also for some interesting carving. Ashley, how you doing, man?
I'm really well, thank you. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah. Hey, well, tell us about this journey you took to this location in South America. It's a great video that you actually posted.
Okay, so let's begin. We should clear up everything you've said is right, but let's get the facts proper. The term Lake Humboldt defines a lake which existed in central South America that receded 30,000 years ago. So that was known as Lake Humboldt, named after the great explorer, of course, who mapped Colombia. But the region of Facatativa, it's a small area about 40 miles to the west of Bogota, which was the anciently known as Bacata city. And it was a center for the Muisca people of central Colombia. It was a sacred site, a ritual center. But of course, 30,000 years ago, when it was beneath Lake Humboldt, that rested at the bottom of a great lake. So what you've got is a matrix of caves that were once at the bottom of a lake that have been stylized and enhanced for living in, you know, over the last 2,000 and 4,000 years.
Right. Now, the area has been dated to 10,000 years or older based, I guess, on organic findings, but it looks like it's significantly older. Do we have any solid evidence on dates?
Yeah, we do. There's four contemporary sites within 60 miles of Bogota or Bogota. And each of those sites has showed organic matter on artifacts, man-made artifacts, that was dated to 11,750 years BC. So we can assume that Bogota Chiva has been inhabited since around that time, since around 12,000 BC. That's when Lake Humboldt receded to the point where the mountaintops became accessible to the hunters, the fishermen. The lake, you know, with different geological shifts over the last 12,000 years, receded in great lumps, if you like. So, you know, it's been inhabited since around between 10 and 12,000 years ago, for sure, which makes it one of the oldest inhabited sites in Colombia, which is really exciting. And, you know, you saw what I filmed there. It's like a journey through time. You can start on the top of the hill at Facatativa, and you're lifting in your hands sands that were deposited there over hundreds of millions of years. Right. And then you walk down 20 meters and you're looking at a petroglyph that was carved 2,000 years ago by the same tradition and lineage of culture, of hunter-gatherer-fisher culture. It's a trip through time, Cliff. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, and you do a great job of guiding the viewer to the various areas of Facatativa. But what I found was quite unique is this large, flat stone. It's a big flat platform. It's called Piedras del Tuno, right? Tuno.
It's called the Piedras del Tuno,
right,
which is basically the stones of Tuno. You know, it's the stone. It's the circular stone center. The platform, which, and of course there would have been a circle of timbers supporting a leather roof, an animal hide roof. That was the sacred enclosure. But more famously, which not a lot of people know, it's not really marked out on the historical planner for Colombia, but the last Zipa, the last indigenous king, if you like, of the Southern Confederacy of Moiscas, In 1557, he was chased there by the Spanish forces, the conquistadors, and it was at those stones, the Piedras del Tuno, that the last Zipa was murdered on the 5th of October, 1537. And that very event brought upon the entire paradigm change of Colombia, the replacement of a religion with multi-gods to a religion with one god, an entire shift of lifestyle. On that, marked by that death of those stones that you find so fascinating, it truly is a fascinating landmark.
Talk a little bit about the cosmological focus of these early people that lived there, because that platform must be used for astronomical purposes, right?
Oh, for sure. So it was an interesting question you asked me to talk about the cosmological viewpoint of these people. Well, what's really important is cosmology didn't exist. Cosmology is a Western construct. What people in the Andean cultures, their worldview was known as cosmovision. Now, to answer your question, sacred sites like these were seen to be a center where the male and female energies in a living outdoor environment met and centered and were united. So what you've got are you've got a lot of hills which represent female aspects. And what you have are the waters from the rivers of the mountains which represent the sperm or the phallic male aspects. And right there at Facatativa, you have like a sort of central fulcrum, a navel, if you like, a belly button to the cosmic universe. And creation rituals were undertaken there. And now what I featured in my documentary were large, you know, you saw that there's like a 30 meter long phallic stone protrusion that points directly towards this circle of stones in the middle. What you've got there is the male phallus pointing towards the womb of the female. So the high priest standing on both would have been interpreted by the people watching this ceremony as the points of contact between here and the creator gods. It's as simple as that. That's how that Facatativa works, and that's what the documentary goes into.
Yeah.
How the mechanics of the landscape enhance the spiritual thoughts of the native people.
No, I really enjoyed the work, and I'm going to put up a link to your site. You have two videos. You have an introductory video, which I'll place on the Facebook page, but then they can go and they can see the full ancient origins
live piece that was a few weeks ago. So, hey, fantastic piece of work, too. I love the photography. All right, Ash, that's it for this week. We'll check in with you next week.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on the show again, and we'll speak to you soon.
So it's time to check in with Gaia and the director of content, Melissa Tittle. We want to learn what's happening not only this week, but we want to hear about future programming with Gaia. So here's Melissa. So we're checking in with Melissa. Melissa is the director of content at Gaia. And I just got a fascinating list from the marketing group at Gaia, and it looks like Ancient Civilizations is the number one, the most watched program in 2017. Melissa, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a fun show.
That's a really good show, and I've only seen one of the episodes, and now I'm going to go back and see them all. I think one of the beauties of it is that you get Graham Hancock to kind of lead things off on these episodes, and that he's a great, not only is he a great mind, but he's just really fluid in what he has to say about these subjects, isn't he?
Of course. I mean, Graham Hancock is a legend. He's a legend in himself. I think like, you know, as we talked before about this series, it's like take it Ancient Aliens, but then to levels that they could never air on, you know, regular mainstream network TV.
Right.
So if you're into that kind of stuff, you should check it out.
Cool. Hey, I also discovered your number two listing is Beyond the Legends with Eric Von Däniken. He's our guest this week on Earth Ancients. He's talking about his new book. His new book is The Gods Never Left Us. And we talked a little bit about that, but is he going to have a second season, or is that it for him?
No, that's it, because it's kind of covering all of his, you know, it is him, the legend, you know. Eric came here and gave us all of his stuff and was like, this is my collection, yeah.
Okay, what else is – oh, this week there's two other shows that are being released. One is Hollywood Decoded with Jay Widener and Jay Dreyer, and then Wisdom Teachings with Dave Wilcock.
Yes. Well, I mean, if you're a fan of Hollywood Decoded, I think – I mean, I enjoy each one of these episodes because I just think that – I mean, I'm obviously a movie person. I love dissecting movies, and Star Trek is a big one. Including, you know, talking about the creator himself who had visions from apparently beings that he was in contact with, and that's how he created the Star Trek series.
Whoa, so, wait a minute. Yeah, the title of this one's Roddenberry Star Trek. So you're saying that he actually had visions?
Yeah.
Wow.
He admitted that he had been in contact with some contact that he was getting. I can't remember the word he used. He didn't use alien or any of that kind of stuff. But he said, I mean, he's in contact with somebody or something that's been giving him the idea for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Melissa, thank you. And we will check in with you again next week.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
So that was Melissa. And to get Gaia, go to Gaia, Gaia.com/Earth Ancients, and you can start viewing these special programs. Many of them perfectly align with Earth Ancients by going to Gaia.com/Earth Ancients, and you can start with just paying 99 cents. It's an introductory rate that you can get, and it is a way to just get it on board to check it out. Hey, if you don't like it, jump off. You don't need to be a part of it. Today's interview sponsor is Vital Transport, and I just want to let you know that we've already started talking about the tours. Our upcoming tour, Secrets of Guatemala, is June 15th through the 24th, and we're going to be visiting Copan. We're going to be visiting Tikal. Now, Tikal is a day and a half by itself because it's a massive location. Hey, we all fly into Guatemala City. We're going to see a number of world-class museums. We're going to Antigua, the beautiful area of Antigua. Then we jump on a bus. We visit Copan. We visit Quilangua. We visit Tikal. We visit a lot of smaller regional sites, Maya sites, and it is a fantastic trip. Michael Lundquist has done a fabulous job of making it extremely reasonable, under $2,000 for the entire program, and it covers a lot: your food, your transportation, your special permits to get in and out. To learn more about it, go to earthancients.com and then go to the tour section, and you can see the entire itinerary as it starts. This is a chance, and remember, this is a small tour. I don't do you big tours. This is a chance to see world-class Mayan sites in the comfort of a private tour group. Come out and join us. Today's interview is with Eric von Däniken, the father of the ancient alien movement and author of the latest book, The Gods Never Left Us. This is a really important interview I enjoyed. It was good to connect with Eric again, and I think you're going to hear some insights regarding Eric's philosophy on ancient aliens that are kind of new. So here's Eric.
It's always a pleasure to speak with Eric von Däniken. He is the author of over 40 different books on ancient aliens. He is really considered the father of the ancient alien movement, and he is prolific in his understanding and his writings, and it's just a pleasure to have him on the program. Eric, how are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I'm sitting in Switzerland. At the moment, it's nearly, what is the time? 7 o'clock in the evening.
It's cold.
It's about 7 degrees Celsius below zero. Very, very, easy, very cold.
So you're starting. Your winter has begun, is what you're saying.
Yes, definitely.
Wow. Hey, well, listen. Thanks for taking a few minutes with me. I want to talk about this new book, "The Gods Never Left Us," which is your sequel to Chariots of the Gods. You wrote that book over 40 years ago. Did you ever expect that you would stay motivated and interested in the subject for so long, Eric?
No. You know, when I wrote Chariots of the Gods, I was a young man. I was a managing director of a Swiss first-class hotel, and I did not expect that worldwide it would create such a storm. In the meantime, I am nearly 83 years old, wow, and I have continued with my writings. 40 books have followed after Chariots of the Gods, and the newest one, The Gods Never Left Us, is the continuation of Chariots of the Gods. I am happy that my spirit and my brain still functions.
No, you're sharp as a tack. I've met with you personally, and you look great, so the age hasn't changed you too much. Your book, this new book, The Gods Never Left Us, is filled with a lot of science, a lot of what I would say, verification of your theories, of your hypothesis that we are from the heavens. We were created by the gods, which were advanced ETs. But I want to ask you a couple of questions immediately. In your, you have a chapter called Contradictions. And in this chapter, you describe various sciences, government, and religious influence to dissuade us, to point us in other directions against the idea that we are from the cosmos, that ETs are around, that UFOs are around. Why is it so important that these people make negative statements about ETs?
Generally spoken, on this planet, we have two types of humans. One type is religious. It doesn't matter what kind of religion. And the other type is rather scientifically. Now, the religious type, they are taught that God made everything, but he made us as crown of creation. The scientific type is absolutely convinced it's all evolution, it's mutation and selection. Now, in both types, if you look at us religiously as crown of creation or scientifically as top of evolution, in both cases, we look at ourselves as the greatest. We think mankind is the greatest thing in the universe. We are not humble enough to accept that there are some other identities out there which are probably much advanced than us. We don't want to accept them because if we accept it, we are not the greatest anymore. We have a psychological problem.
Wow, interesting. You know, you give an amazing example of ETs in disguise that the religious sects, especially the Vatican, doesn't want us to know about. Can you talk a little bit about the event at Fatima, in Portugal in 1917, and why this is a real important event that happened that has been disguised from us?
You see, in 1917, it started all on October 13th, 1970. There were three children. They were shepherds. They were out there, and they came back home in the evening, and they said they saw the Holy Virgin Mary. So they had a vision. Now, the father said, forget about it, it's all nonsense. But the children said, no, it's true, because the Holy Virgin Mary promised us she will show up the same month, the next month, for 6 months continuation at the same place, the same day. So it's all started on October 13th. It's also on May 13th, then June, July, August, etc. On October 13th, there were 80,000 people out in the field watching to see the Holy Virgin Mary. And all of a sudden, the heavens opened and the gigantic disc showed over the crowd of 80,000 people. And the gigantic disc was there turning slowly, and it took this phenomenon took place for 8 minutes. The newspaper in 1970 were full at that time. Now the oldest of the shepherd children received the message telepathically in her brain. She should give the message to the Holy Pope in Rome, and he should publish it in 1960. Now, the event took place in 1917. Between 1917 and 1960 are 43 years. So in 1960, the Pope at Rome, at that time it was Benedictus XV, he opened the so-called secret, and he said, I cannot publish it. It would create a panic. Later, the journalists, they start with rumors. Well, what did they say? A panic? Does it mean that the next world war? So they went to the Bishop of Leyra. Leyra is the Bishop of Fatima, which where the whole place took place. And the Bishop of Leyra said, it has nothing to do with world war. It had nothing to do with destruction. It has to do with our faith. Now, I myself, I'm educated as a Catholic. And as a Catholic, I know that the Holy Virgin Mary, according to our belief, she went up to heaven with her body. She's, so to say, the highest female representative in sky. And she gives an order. And her representative on earth did not obey and say, I cannot publish it. It will create a panic. Simply because between 1917 and 1960, you see, 1970, this is where the sun showed the disc. 1960. This was much later, 43 years later. In the meantime, Fatima, the village in Portugal, has become a pilgrim place, a wonderful, gigantic pilgrim. In the meantime, a pilgrim place in honor of the Holy Virgin Mary. Now, in 1960, the Pope opens the secret, and he realizes it was not the Holy Mary. It was extraterrestrials. Now, really, he can say, I cannot publish it. It will create a panic. So we were not told the truth by the church, at least at that time in 1960. And the same thing happened with politics. It's always the same story. UFO cases, of course, there are a lot of UFO cases which are stupid and nonsense. We know all that. But there are very serious UFO cases too, and they all should be ridiculed. And that's what nerves me. And that's why in my new book, The Gods Never Left Us, I bring a lot of examples which you cannot deny anymore, you cannot disprove anymore, you can clearly push on the table, including mythologies and stories from the deep past.
Yeah. Eric, we're going to show in a minute that you're prophetic in your descriptions of ancient aliens, and there's a lot of new research that we'll be talking about shortly that really validates what you've been talking about for 40 years. But before I move on, what would you say the secret is, that this Fatima secret that the Vatican doesn't want people to know about? If you were to speculate about that, what would the message be? Do you have any idea?
Of course. In 1917, a group of UFO observed our planet. They realized immediately that in 1917, we had no technology, for example, radio communication all over the planet. In 1917, there was no TV station going worldwide. There were no satellite television, nothing. So the extraterrestrials observed this, and they said, okay, this humanity needs another 40 years or so, and then they will have global communication. So they give a message and said, okay, in 1960, 43 years later, 47 years later, you, the highest representative, you should present this. And the highest, which means the Pope in Rome, opens the message, and he realizes between 1917 and 1960, Fatima, the place in Portugal, has become a gigantic place of pilgrim in honor of the Holy Virgin Mary. But now he realizes it was not the Holy Virgin Mary. So he can really not give an answer. So that's the problem.
Okay, so it's probably something pretty devastating that it would probably make people think twice about the church.
Okay. Yes, well, we should think twice about everything. You know, in many cases, it's not just a bad influence. You know, the popes could not answer differently. If I would have been pope in 1960 and I opened the message of Fatima, I could not give another answer. You know, it's not conspiracy. Simply, you cannot. The same thing happened with so many politics and military or professors who are brilliant teachers, brilliant translators, and they realize something, but they cannot. Let's give you an example. Let's imagine our Pope today would have, yesterday night, a discussion with two extraterrestrials. And tomorrow he stands on his balcony in Rome and says to, I don't know, 80,000 people, well, yesterday I had a deep conversation with two extraterrestrials. His own believer and his own priest would say, what's wrong with our holy Pope? Mm. Has he gone insane or what? So even if you have a position in the mankind, if the time is not ripe, you cannot publish it. It doesn't help.
Yeah.
It all needs a changing of what we call the spirit of time.
Well, I mean, the message also could say, and you hint on this in your book, that the aliens would say to the Pope or to the higher people, the government, that, hey, you all are from another world. Your DNA is from aliens, and you are the creation of a superior race. And that would probably freak people out. That would change everything.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
In
your book, you basically provide great evidence that scientists now are beginning to understand through the DNA separation, the genome, that we are test tube babies, basically. We are the design of higher races or intelligent races from other planets. Do you believe that scientists are going to find evidence of alien DNA at some point when they really begin to tweak what we understand about our early development?
Yes, I am absolutely convinced of this. I know two of modern young genetics, young means about 40 years now, and they say definitely there is a change in the genome. You know, to make it clear, we are the product of evolution, so you not contradict evolution, but during evolution, there were always some influence from outside. You see, take an apple tree, and an apple tree has been changed by the humans by grafting. We simply changed it. But doing grafting, you don't have to know nothing about genetics, nothing about DNA. You just cross it, and you make a change in an apple tree. Now, the apple tree definitely has an evolution on the planet. He was grown up here slowly, but during his life of the thousands of years, we changed it. The same thing happens with the extraterrestrial. We are the product of evolution. But not only. Our planet was never only in the universe. There was always influence from outside. That's what we have to learn. And in mythology and in religion, this influence from outside is a clear message. There was someone here who gave new information, new technologies, etc. And this is going on. So evolution, yes, but not only.
That's fascinating. We'll talk a little bit later about some of the people that you report on your book. I want to discuss what you believe are subtle forms of communication from extraterrestrial civilizations, and those are the crop circles. And the crop circles have grown in intricacy and sophistication over the years. What makes you think those are communication devices from ETs?
It becomes too complicated. You know, we humans want to be normal and scientific and stand with both feet on the ground. So some days in 1966, the first crop circles arrived somewhere in Australia. And then it came more and more. So we look for the next scientific explanation. We find all kinds of explanations. What could be the reason for it? And then the circles become more complicated. It's not circles anymore. It's pictures. Then after we have looked for the normal explanation, we find no more answer. The next step is there must be falsificates. Of course, we find falsificates. They accept we do this, this, and this way. But in the meantime, the so-called circles become complicated. After all natural explanation, after all scientific and reasonable explanation, we are at the point where we have to ask, what the hell is going on? We know we have falsificator, definitely. But we have also gigantic pictures which appear overnight in a few minutes. They have been filmed. So what is going on here? In the meantime, some professors of physics of the University of Birmingham in England are starting to study this. And they all say, yes, falsification, yes, but that's not the final answer. It's too complicated. So I think someone, let's call it UFO or whatever, tries to force us. You have to think. Now, after you have all the normal explanation, scientific explanation, you have to think, hey, what's that? It's an evolution. It becomes always more complicated, more sophisticated. What's going on? That's why they do it. They need a generation, at least one, to change what we call the spirit of time. That's right, guys. Slowly, slowly, we have to accept we are not alone.
I mean, some of those crop circles actually appear to have scientific formulas and strange coding that some people are beginning to decipher. So there are appears to be definite messages in those crop circles, aren't there?
That's definitely what the scientists who look with scientific methods after it say. There is a message. It's too complicated for the falsificator. It goes too fast. In a few minutes, you have gigantic pictures in the field. So we have to think about it. Is there another dimension? Is somebody there to try to contact us, to give us a message, and we are too stupid to understand it? Whatever. The message is, think about it. You are not alone.
Fascinating. I mean, that's a real big question. Eric, you've been talking about proof for decades, about evidence of scientific manipulation of humans, of influence from ETs. And now in this new book, you actually begin to show it with astrophysicists, biologists, and other scientists coming to the conclusion that we are from the cosmos. You give a great example. Chandra Wickramsey is a brilliant mathematician, and he actually says the theory of the primordial soup, our origination of as primordial cells, is dead. That thought is dead. Why is his conclusion so important?
Well, it's not only Professor Dr. Chandra Wickramsey from the University of Birmingham in England. There are many other scientists. We know we had a primordial soup, definitely. We know atoms have formed molecules, definitely. But these molecules have not formed a cell. We can prove in the meantime that it doesn't work for a lot of reasons, which we have not no time, and this is not the scientific radio to explain all this. It doesn't work. So the information has to come from outside, information of life. Now, if it comes from outside, we ask for what? So are we simply changing the problem of the beginning of life? Are we moving it to another solar system? And there they had the same problem. Finally, you start at the point. Where did it all begin? And at the beginning, we humans, we have no answer. We have two possibilities. We say in religion, in the beginning was God. Then we should ask, okay, what created God? Where God come from? Or in science, we say in the beginning we have the Big Bang or more Big Bang. Then we have to ask, okay, where does the Big Bang come from? I mean, even a nucleon, an atom, has to have a beginning. Nothing comes from nothing, not even astrophysics. So we don't know where the beginning is. So just imagine a circle and a circle on a piece of paper. And I ask the people, tell me, what did the circle start? The logic of every person says, well, the people that the circle must have a beginning, but he cannot answer that question. The circle is closed like a bull, etc. So the question is, where did life come from? And today's modern, absolute modern astrophysics and modern biology say, life comes from outside. We don't know from where, from outside. And this being from outside is exactly what we are. And here we end in the religious traditions. You know, I'm familiar not only with the Bible, with many other holy places, but in the Bible, everyone knows the gods created humans according to their own image. The gods made humans after their own image. So we are the offsprings of them. That's why they understand that. That's why they show in crop circles, all kind of stuff, knowing how we react, knowing we look at the next reasonable scientific answer. And at the end, there is no more scientific answer after the falsificator. We look for other answers. That's exactly what they want. They want that the situation changes slowly. One and a half generation, the spirit of time has to change. Then we become humble. We realize, okay, we are not the biggest, neither the crown of creation nor the top of evolution. Then we learn how to communicate with the extraterrestrials. No shock anymore.
It's funny how arrogant we are from a religious and scientific point of view, that we, our current science believes, we are the only ones. There's nobody else out there. And in the face of billions of planets that could sustain life, we still are kind of backwards in stretching our imagination that any other beings are existing, which is kind of... It's amazing that we keep this up. And One of the things I wanted to ask you about is you mentioned a U.S., an American geneticist. His name is Craig Venter. And for years, you've been talking about the ability to create life. And he has, in his lab with others, has developed a very rudimentary life form. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, Greg Venter, he's brilliant. He's one of these leading genetics. He did incredible things to know our genome, how it works and so. And in his laboratory, that was 1.5 years ago, he created the form of life. And he himself, he used an error of how many billions of atoms and how millions of genes to put this form of life. A form of life means it multiplies like a cell. It continues to be. But Greg Venter himself, he doesn't know why. He said, okay, we had it. We made it and it works. It multiplies, but he doesn't know why. We start to create forms of life. That's dangerous. We start to play God.
But, I mean, in the ancient texts, the Bible and a lot of these Sumerian texts, it actually describes genetic manipulation, and you have been talking about that for years. So this is not something that is just occurring. It's been going on for centuries, or actually thousands of years.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely, you know, in the past, extraterrestrials were here. In the past, I mean thousands of years ago, at least 6,000 of years ago. How do we know that extraterrestrials were here? Some of the humans were taken by extraterrestrials up to their mother spaceships. These humans have written books. For example, the Book of Enoch, which nobody knows. Enoch is the seventh patriarch before the Great Flood in the Bible. Enoch is the first human, according to the Bible, who leaves the earth in a fiery chariot. But we have a parallel in the Hindu tradition. We have a guy called Arjuna. Arjuna, like Enoch, he was taken up into the sky. He learned the language. They teach him in different belongings, etc. So I am knowing these texts. So I'm knowing we have this not in only one religion. Enoch, for example, he comes up in his mother spaceship, and he learns the language of the extraterrestrials. And then he has different teachers. The astronomer says to Enoch, human, look out there at the window. Do you see this little light out there? You humans, you call it moon. But the moon has no light by itself. And he explains that the moon receives its light from the sun. He explains why the moon sometimes is full and half and different phases and all that. So this is astronomical knowledge. What a teacher says to Enoch, look out of the window, human. You see this gigantic light. You call it, you humans call it the sun. You see all these little lights out there. All these lights are suns like your sun. And he explains that we live in a solar system where the Earth surrounds the planet Earth in 365 days, plus leap hours. So all this is scientific information. Of course, I know that some thousands of years ago, our ancestors, they had no idea of nature, that they were the victims of an earthquake, of a thundering, of a lightning. They could not understand what it. So the first religions definitely were natural religions. But at the same time, we have to differentiate. In that case, where I just mentioned, they were information, scientific information. As soon as you have information, the so-called gods talk to the humans and tell them to this and this. Take, for example, the Bible, the second book of Moses, where for pages and pages that the so-called God explains how can you avoid infections, bacteria. So this is scientific information. Soon as you have this, forget the natural religions. Mm. Natural religions did exist, of course, but not the same thing where scientific information was flowing. They were here and they promised to return in the far future. And at the moment, at least to my knowledge, they are observing us.
You know, it's funny because you reference the Bible and other sacred books, but you also, in this new book, talk about the work of Dr. Hermann Burgard, who is actually taking these Sumerian clay texts and finding new information. Now, you describe from the Sumerian point of view, what sounds like a space station that is orbiting Earth, and other evidence of ET ships and technology. Can you talk a little bit about what Hermann discovered?
You know, I have always suggested some of our old translations were wrong, not because the professors are stupid. The professors in the past, I mean, 100 and 200 years, they were brilliant personalities, but they were living in another spirit of time. So if they had a text where some human were taken up into the sky, they said, well, he's going up to heaven, because they had no idea of flying, of aircrafts, of space travel, etc. All these brilliant personalities translated the old text into a religious part, and the psychological part, to make it understandable. Now, Dr. Burgard, he's a psychologist in Germany, and I always suggested, why don't we change a few keywords? For example, in all the holy texts, we have the word of angel. What is an angel? An angel, I was told when I was a young man, is a messenger from God. But then you read in the old text, angels had sex with humans. Definitely, in the Bible, in order, they had sex with humans. And angels said they have killed thousands of humans, etc. What is an angel? Now just cross the word angel and put a new word on it, change it into extraterrestrials. Or what is heaven? We have been told when we live correctly, when we kill nobody, we harm nobody, at the end of our life, we'll go to heaven. Heaven is the place of happiness. Heaven is the place where we are united with God. But then we learn in this heaven, there was opposition. For example, in the Christian Jewish tradition, there was an archangel with the name of Lucifer. He one day came to the throne of the Almighty God and said, we don't serve you anymore. So Lucifer was drawn out of heaven. There was a fight in heaven. If heaven would have been the place of happiness, because you are united with God, then there is no opposition. There is no fight. So we should change the word heaven into space, a war in space. Practically every old human mythology, including Greek with Jews, starts with a war in heaven. So we change the word angel into extraterrestrial. We change the word heaven into space. Now we make this 10 times. We change 10 important words into modern sequence. And that's exactly what Dr. Hermann Burger, which is a biologist, has done. He knows all the sources. He knows all the words. He knows all this. That's a complicated science. And he says to me, and he's not the only one, Eric, now it makes sense. In the past, we have translated all this in a religious, psychological way, because it had to make sense for us. In the meantime, we know the sense of the past was nonsense. It's a psychology. In the meantime, it makes sense, all these new translations. I'm happy about all these things.
So actually,
the same thing, by the way, in India.
So just changing the context is what makes these ancient clay tablets come to life, I guess, is that they're not mythology, they're actual events.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's not only the Sumerian part. In India, you know, in India are many, many old Sanskrit texts. And there are gigantic texts which speak about extraterrestrials, etc. The same thing, what we have in the Bible, what we have in Sumerian text, we have in the Sanskrit in India. Now, a professor, doctor of Sanskrit, his name is Dima Kanjilal. If you go to the internet, Kanjilal has two A. So he has translated some of the old Indian text with modern interpretation. And he comes to the same conclusion as Dr. Burger for the Sumerian part. Finally, it starts to make sense.
Hmm. So you suggest that the Greek mythologies are actual events. The Greeks describe the creation of man, but you write about the god Prometheus and how he educated these early forms of very rudimentary men. And these men were not actually able to think on their own. They had to be shown what to do. They were kind of like very primitive forms of human beings. Do you believe that is a actual a vision of early creation?
No, it was not the vision. You know, some thousands of years ago, our forefathers were Stone Age people. And seen from a technical point of view, we were primitive, only from a technical point of view. Now extraterrestrials arrived. Our forefathers could not understand nothing. They had no idea of technology. And they believed, erroneously, that these extraterrestrials were gods. We all know there are no gods. But our ancestors believed they are gods. So the gods became to the founders of the gigantic big religion, including thousands of cultures, etc. It's all a misunderstanding. At that time, they told the humans, we are no gods. Don't make a picture of God. We are just coming from the sky, from space. But in tradition, the space has been translated into heaven. So it's all a terrible misunderstanding thing. And these gods, the so-called gods, they also promised in the past, in a far future, we will return. And they have returned. Some 450 years ago, the first Spanish conqueror came to South America, today's Peru. The natives believe that they are the long-awaited gods. The same thing in Central America. Hernando Cortes, he was a Spanish conqueror, he came together with Moctezuma. Moctezuma was the ruler of the Aztecs. All through the ruler, he believed that the Spanish conqueror was the returning god. The same thing all over the planet. So in the beginning, the natives, when always the white people came, they believed these are the long-awaited god, which means this accepting of returning of something is not the Christian invention. It existed before Christianity. And the same thing we have today, by the way. I'm educated as a Christian. We wait for Jesus. But the Muslim society is waiting for Mahdi. The Jewish community is waiting for the Messiah. Now, every religious community is waiting for someone. Now, honestly, not every religion can be right. Some of them must be wrong. And I'm afraid it was the extraterrestrials who said, we will return in a far future. And this has entered into mythology and into religion. In the meantime, we are here, and I'm convinced we are under observation at the moment.
Eric, we're almost at the end of our time together, and this new book, The Gods Never Left Us, is a real fascinating read, and it's filled with really great information. I have a couple other questions for you. You mentioned that a lot of Native people talk about their gods, and one of the great examples you give is of the Dagon people of Africa and their connection with ETs. Now, they talk about very sophisticated astronomical connections and planets and things like that. Do you believe that they're one of the best examples of having a great source to ETs?
You know, the Dogon tribe, they live in Africa, in Central Africa, in today's Republic of Mali. Now, the Dogon tribe has been investigated by French ethnologists already in the 50s, 1952, 1957. And the ethnologists realized that this Dogon tribe, which is a wonderful ethnical black society, this Dogon tribe has every 50 year a gigantic festivity. So the ethnologists asked them, why only every 50 year? That's a very long period. I mean, not everyone of you becomes 50 years old. And the priest said, because every 50 year, an invisible star is surrounding that star up there, and they pointed to Sirius. Sirius is the brightest shining star in our hemisphere. So, and they said an invisible star is surrounding every 50 years. That's why we make our festivity every 50 years, etc. They even said around this invisible star there are many planets. They have name of planets, etc. Now, only much later, and I mean 150 years later, we found out, our astronomy found out that Sirius, the bright shining star, is in reality a double star system. Today in astronomy, we call it Sirius A and Sirius B. Around Sirius A is Sirius B surrounding exactly every 50 years, like the Dogons know it. But Sirius B is a so-called white dwarf. You cannot see Sirius B with your naked eye. You need a powerful telescope to see Sirius B. So who told them that Sirius B is surrounding around the bright shining Sirius A every 50 years? They say it was a visitor from heaven who teaches us all that. His name was Nomo. So we have astronomical knowledge, and I don't go into detail now because they know much more. They know some planets surrounding the planet, surrounding the stars. It's very complicated. There is an influence and information from outer space.
Hey, Eric, I've always wanted to ask you this, and it's funny that I'm just thinking about it now. Have you personally or a friend or any of your fans had a message from an ET that basically says, this is what's going on?
Yeah. You know, in practice, I have never seen a UFO. I wish to see a UFO. But in my, in my dreams, I really had contacts with extraterrestrials, discussions with extraterrestrials. But all this is not scientific.
Yeah.
This is not on the ground with those fish. It's just like dreamings and fantasy and so. In reality, I miss to stand before a UFO.
Yeah, I it's funny you mentioned that because I'm kind of like the same way. I'm like, I'd sure like to see an alien. I mean, I've been producing conferences and talking about UFOs for years, but it would be great to have a ship land in my front yard and go,
yeah,
hey, we're here. We're here, buddy.
Okay.
Eric,
yeah.
One last question. The Gods Never Left Us is your follow-up to Chariots of the Gods. What would you like for the reader to get out of the book? What do you hope the reader will get from reading this new book?
Just understand. Some thousands of years ago, we were visited by beings from outer space. In the meantime, I can prove this, also scientifically. I mean, I have published 40 books about this. I know there are some sequences which you can disprove. Don't worry. Some sequences where I was in error. It doesn't matter. That's a normal scientific way. But in the meantime, we have a lot of information which we clearly, the ones who know it, know. We have been influenced by beings from outer space in the past. And at the moment, we are under observation again. That's the message of the new book. We are under observation. Somebody is observing us, learning our languages, learning our political systems, learning our religious systems. It's like a scientific observation, learning how much bacteria, vira, what kind of weapons they have, and also learning how do we function. We would have a shock of the gods if they would show up on a football stadium. We would not understand it. We would say it's just impossible. It cannot. So you need a time of preparation. And that's the part of my book, The Gods Never Left Us. I really say it's written, it's the continuation of Chariots of the Gods.
Wow, fantastic. Eric, thank you for spending some time with me. For those of you interested in this new book, you can get it now on Amazon.com. Also, to learn about what Eric's up to, you can go to Dankin, www.dankin.com. It's Dankin.com.
Okay, that's it for today's show. I want to thank Eric for joining me from Zurich. Thanks to Melissa Tittle of Gaia. Also to Mark Forster, Curtis Hartog for the production work, as always. If you would want a copy of the book, I have some books I'm going to raffle off. Send me an email saying, I'd like to get a copy of Eric's new book. Make sure you give me the name, The Gods Never Left Us, and say, Cliff, I'd like to get a copy. I'm going to raffle, I think I have a case, which is 12 books. So send me an email, cliff@earthancients.com. And say, Cliff, I want to get a copy, and you may get one. I'm going to get rid of them pretty quick because they just take up space. I get books all the time. Hey, have a great week. I hope you're doing well. Stay well, and we'll talk to you next time.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle jangle, oh what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Hello, boys and girls. Hello, hello.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, for he loves us just the same.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He'll come around when chimes ring out, it's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all if we just follow the light. Let's give thanks to the Lord above, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Merry Christmas!